Morning, New Covenant. My name is Kevin Hamilton. I'm here with a brief meditation on our lectionary readings today in the scriptures as we gather remotely to worship and then some of us get together in person for our new monthly ritual. I want to stitch together a few of the different verses that are in today's lectionary, the collection of verses that our brothers and sisters across the church are looking at together. And the theme here I want to look at has to do with something that we often say to one another about how God provides, which is that God is the one who made us and so always knows exactly what we need, even when we don't know what we need. I've heard folks say that across our congregation. It's a matter of great encouragement. But I wanted to think today in light of the scriptures about what it means that we actually say that to each other. Why is this something we regularly express in different ways as part of our worship and communion? I don't just mean why do we believe it, but why do we say it? Why do we say it out loud? What is the function of affirming to one another that God knows us and knows what we need? We might say it sometimes as a form of testimony to share with others, when we found that something came to us that we weren't expecting, but was exactly the thing. And when we do that, we don't usually share it to brag, but to offer encouragement. When God offers something to us that was just what we needed and we didn't know it, we want to encourage someone else with it. It's a way of saying, have faith, something great happened to me. We might also specifically remind another that God is the one who made us and knows just what we need as a mode of encouragement to someone else who's feeling lost or in need. Hopefully we don't do that lightly. We only do it with our most treasured relationships where we know there's a basis of love on which such encouragement can come. So it doesn't just feel like, I don't know, trying to put silver lining around a cloud or something, but we sometimes might encourage a loved one to hang in there and look for the surprises in how God provides. But either way, when we testify to how the Lord provides for us, it's both a form of worship. When we say it out loud, when we say it to another, it's a form of praise to the one who provides. God, you are the one who provides what I need. It's a form of prayer. But it's also, when directed to others or said out loud in front of others, a way of prompting each other's senses to look out, stay open. We actually, when we share these things, we conjure up people's imaginations. We invite them to start looking around differently, wait differently, to imagine the world as full of God's provision that might be coming that we just aren't ready to see. And I've talked about this before. It's probably a regular theme for me in my teaching, and that this is an example of where imagination is key to how we together as a people live in the face of need, in the face of frustration, of pain, of want. On our own as individuals, we struggle often to imagine a different situation than we're in. We need each other to imagine something other, and that's probably why worship is also something we do together with others. One could say that worship is indeed itself important as a form of imagination, of prompting our minds and senses together to stay alert, to read the world differently, to hear the world differently. Those are some of the lessons and themes I take from today's lectionary, the combination of stories and verses here. And I want to look across three examples from today's lectionary to sort of see what we can learn a little more deeply about this aspect of our life with each other and with our Maker. The first example, briefly, from today's lectionary comes from a story of King David, a familiar one. The story at the tail end of David's pursuit of Bathsheba, a woman that he spied from a distance and moved to take. Today's lectionary comes at the tail end of that when the prophet Nathan is coming to confront David about what he's done here. But in this story, if you don't know it, I think it's best described as a man with a profound lack of imagination, in part because he is engaged in an act of profound isolation. We read, even before today's lectionary's passage, of how David is alone and discovers his own desire for a woman he spies from a distance. He sees Bathsheba somewhere else. He's not even with her. And that desire, that need he feels for her, so overwhelms him that he puts Bathsheba's husband, Uriah, in harm's way in order to isolate her so that he may take her. It's a picture here of one man's solitary, lonely even, need that when pursued results in another's isolation as well. He ends up experiencing his need alone, pursues that need, and ends up making Bathsheba alone as well by removing Uriah from her life. Needs pursued in isolation, such as this one, suffer from a lack of imagination, dulled senses. Not only can we not see the surprises God has in store for us, but we end up pursuing our needs in destructive ways. How else could we really understand David's response to the prophet Nathan in today's lectionary, who comes in judgment to David with an analogy that's so obvious that every time I read it, I don't understand why David can't see that it applies to him. Nathan tells him a story that is meant to incriminate David, and David can't even see it till the story's over, that actually, oh gosh, this is about me. Needs experienced alone and unshared make us stupid. They make us unable to see. They lead us to make decisions that leave others in the same way. We end up as alone as when we started, when we pursue these needs in isolation, ungratified, and now with others suffering anew in their own isolation because of our actions. In the story of David's lonely pursuit of his own needs and his lack of imagination in that, I have to wonder, would his need have felt so urgent? Would he have needed to put Uriah in harm's way in order to take Bathsheba if he had simply shared what he was going through with somebody else, if he had not been so alone in that need, whatever he was going through there? So that's the first example from today's lectionaries of what happens when we experience need in isolation and therefore without imagination. The second story in today's lectionary of God's people overcome by their felt needs, just as David was, comes from the book of Exodus, a little later in the story of Israel. And we read in the lectionary in Exodus that, quote, "The whole congregation of the Israelites there in the desert complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The Israelites said to Moses and Aaron, 'If only we die by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread, for you've brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger.' Then the Lord said to Moses, 'I'm going to rain bread from heaven for you. And each day the people shall go out and gather enough for that day. And that way I'll test them, whether they will follow my instruction or not.'" Many of you probably know what happens next in the story, how God provides manna in the desert to them so they can eat, but according to rules that were meant to prevent hoarding and taking only what you needed. They fail at those rules and suffer the consequences, but they eventually get it right and end up fed in that wilderness and surviving in the desert by God's hand with stories to tell for generations. There in the desert, the Lord provided just what they needed and only what they needed in a way they could not have imagined. Who could have expected that hungry there in the desert, they would have had bread appear in the night there in the fruitless plains? But another part of the story here has often made me wonder, what made God respond to their complaining? It's not exactly ingratiating. There they are longing for Egypt where they were enslaved. At this point, after a laborious escape, it seems like kind of a slap against what God has provided. This complaining feels like it's painted in a negative light in this story, and yet God hears them and shows care. Maybe a way to understand why and how God responds to their complaints is to think about it in the context of how we experience need, how God provides us, provides for us in those needs in unexpected ways, but how it's important that we do all this in company. Perhaps it's the fact that Israel's complaints, however ungrateful and even grating, happened in community, together. And by complaining together in a great chorus, they gave the Lord a chance to show them something. Because they experienced their needs together, they had a chance to see those needs fulfilled. There was room for imagination, because they were vulnerable to each other in their needs. There was room for seeing God fulfill their needs in unexpected ways. I love how much wonder is captured in that story, how even in the scriptures in Exodus, it says, when the Israelites saw the manna, they said to one another, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, "It is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat." There's a surprise there. Their needs were expressed openly, even in a grumbling way, even in a way we can't really say is in any way holy or something we want to emulate, but by making their needs present to each other and to God, God could surprise them. They could turn to each other and say, am I seeing this? Is this real? And have God's provision affirmed across one another. There's an amplification of God's grace in each individual's experience of that revelation of how God would meet this need. How great it is to see that wonder there. That what is it? The surprise. Their senses open and opened to discovery. The third and final story today from the lectionary that I think takes us through this journey of a meditation on needs and how God meets them and how we exist together and alone in that comes from the Gospel of John. In an account of people pursuing Jesus during his ministry, and they're hungry and full of desire for more miracles. And in their exchange with Jesus in this passage, we see a people so driven by their desire that they even keep shifting what they think they want. There's a great series in this lectionary passage of them basically moving with so much urgency about what they think they want, and Jesus saying, "Well, actually, I think you might want this." And we keep hearing them shift. So first, when they find Jesus, he actually sees to the heart of their desire. That they got some free food a while back, and now they're hungry again. They're driven by their stomachs. Jesus sees with imagination, however, and sees that there's another hunger below that that's driving them. In chapter 6, verse 26 and 27, it says, "Jesus answered the people, 'Very truly, I tell you, you're looking for me not because you saw signs, but because you ate your fill of the loaves. Do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures for eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you, for it is on him that God the Father has set his seal.'" I love how they don't even argue with this in the story. They were chasing Jesus down. They're basically hoping he'd make more bread, feed them more. He says, "Well, actually, I think you don't want bread. You want something bigger than that." And they're like, "Okay, fine, fine. Show us what to do. Okay, we just want something. We don't even know. You help us out. You want us to perform miracles? You want us to make special bread too? Sure, that's a ticket. We don't need the bread. Just show us how to do the miracles." And then Jesus responds back to them and says, "Well, actually, you don't need to do these miracles yourself. You just need to believe in me." And they kind of, and again, they're like, "Okay, sure, fine, that too. Yeah, sure, great. Okay, how do we believe in you then? What are the signs that are going to help us believe in you?" You can feel their urgency through this passage, their willingness to do anything to satisfy their hunger. They're vulnerable in that way. They're not seeing their own desire as impolite or something to be embarrassed about, something to stuff down in isolation, as David did there, looking at Bathsheba from a distance. But they do need guiding. And it takes a lot of steps before they understand that Jesus has come to them just like the manna came to their forebears. As full of desire as they are, as driven by it, they need to voice it. They need to get it out. They need to make it public if they have it. And then they can be ready to have their eyes open to what is really going on there in that need. In this passage there from John, we see Jesus comparing himself to manna in the desert. Something in front of you that meets your needs in ways you don't expect, but that you wouldn't have recognized at all if you hadn't expressed your need. And here God's people discover God's unexpected ways of meeting needs in public, in front of each other, in a state of being driven unabashedly by their desires, and in this case, in the presence of their very teacher and salvation. I hardly need to say to you all, I'm sure, that our needs are messy. We don't understand them half the time. We're embarrassed about them sometimes. We don't always know what drives us. I don't know what I need most of the time. I'm hardly better than I was probably when I was a toddler. I get unsettled, I get crabby, bothered by something that nags at me. My impulse might even be at a busy time or in a time of service to others to bury the vague longings or to seek their fulfillment in isolation to protect my vulnerability in that need. But the scriptures seem to point to the rewards of just letting those unmet needs hang out there, messy and all. When we voice them, when we explore them out loud with others, we present more opportunities for seeing how God meets them in others. We create chances not just to be surprised by how God meets us, but to offer others a chance to be surprised at how God meets us. We practice longing together, looking together. This is a practice I'd be curious to explore with you here in the church. We've done a lot of work together in the church of praying for discernment, of looking for signs, of guidance, and I'm glad we do. But long before you get to the question of discernment, of seeing, is this God showing me something? What is God showing me? Maybe we can do some work together of collectively just exploring what it is that we're even feeling that we want. And maybe by doing that, maybe by understanding what we want, we present more opportunities for revelation among us. May your week ahead be full of your needs met in glorious and surprising ways. And may your week ahead hold opportunities to share those discoveries with others toward our collective moving ever more into the way of living that our Maker intends. Amen.